Save big on everything for your next staining project when you shop at Menards. Transform your home in one weekend with exterior stain and sealer from Dutch Boy. It provides one coat protection on decks, fences, siding, and outdoor furniture, and repels rain after just 4 hours of application. That means quicker results, saving you both time and money. Check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big money
at Menards. When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper. Distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at Remarkable.com today.
Hey guys, and welcome to Mysteries and Histories with me, your host, Georgia Marie. This podcast is adapted from my YouTube channel, and this episode is part of my Vault series, where I'm turning my back catalogue into podcasts. So, if I ever reference photos or things on screen, please remember that these episodes were originally made for video. Also, if research or references seem out of date, please bear in mind as well that some of these episodes were recorded as far back as 2016. I just want to make sure that all of my content is available on podcast as well for you to enjoy. If you wish to find me on YouTube, I am just Georgia Marie over there, and with all my disclaimers out of the way, enjoy the episode. You've probably heard of the notorious Salem witch trials that happened over in the USA in 1692, but have you heard of the Pendle witch trials that happened 80 years earlier in 1612, right here in the UK, in Lancashire? Because I certainly hadn't until you guys started requesting that I look into it. So to begin this story, I need to tell you about two families, each headed by a matriarch, an old widow. There's Elizabeth Southern, who is known locally as Old Demdike, and Anne Whittle, who is known locally as Mother Chattox. Elizabeth was about 80 years old, she was widowed, blind and poor, and she'd been known locally as being a witch for about 50 years, and it was commonly thought that she'd also brought up her children and grandchild in witchcraft as well. Most notably her daughter Elizabeth Devis and three of Elizabeth's children, Alison, James and Janet Devis. Anne Whittle, Mother Chattox, was reportedly an enemy of Elizabeth. She was also a witch who knew charms and spells, and she had a daughter called Anne Redfern. According to Alison Devis, a decade earlier, Anne Whittle, Mother Chattox, had been caught stealing clothes and oatmeal from the Southerns. But as if that wasn't enough, she'd also been threatening Alison's father into paying her a yearly dole of meal as protection from her witchcraft, blackmail. He did so for years, agreeing to give her £8 of oatmeal each year in return for the safety of his family. But one year he failed to pay it, and soon after he ended up dying. On his deathbed he claimed that his illness had been caused by Mother Chattox. Apparently Elizabeth, Old Demdike, had been the one to introduce Anne to witchcraft in the first place, by introducing her to the devil about 14 years earlier. All of which is definitely enough to make two families mortal enemies, rival village witches, and the families just didn't really like one another. But when I talk about these women being witches, it wasn't necessarily something considered to be scandalous at the time. They were actually often called cunning women rather than witches. Cunning women were considered to be good and liked, witches were bad and dark. There was an old saying, cunning women heal, witches steal. For poor villages, having a local cunning woman was important as they couldn't generally afford a visit to an actual doctor. A cunning woman was considered to be a doctor and law enforcement, somebody to listen, all rolled into one. It was still considered to be magical as witchcraft, but they weren't considered to be witches. I wouldn't say that people necessarily liked witchcraft, but it was very accepted. It was just part of village life in the 1600s. There were these village healers who practiced magic, healing people with their herbs and medicines. It was more of a case of some people just being more in tune with nature, and they were generally the ones in the village that people would turn to if they were struck down with an ailment. Whilst Anne Whittle, or Mother Chatterox as she was known, was said to have been harassed and assaulted by the devil, most neighbours didn't really pay this too much mind. Both Mother Chatterox and Old Demdike were just these kooky, quirky old women who had something supernatural about them. But to really understand how the Pendle witch trials came to be, we need to talk about some context. It really begins in 1603, when King James VI of Scotland became King James I of England, inheriting the throne from Queen Elizabeth I. Like his predecessor, James was strongly Protestant. He was also terrified of witchcraft, something they'd been very fascinated with for a while. James considered himself to be an intelligent man, and he was incredibly interested in the theology of Protestantism, and focused much of this on theology of witchcraft specifically. Religion and the supernatural were very closely linked back then, and the strongest Protestants believed Catholicism to be a demonic religion. James even visited Denmark, where he attended the trial of the North Berwick witches. All of this immersion and knowledge about the world of witches made him very paranoid, and by the 1590s he was pretty convinced the Scottish witches were plotting against him, even writing a book entitled Demonology about witchcraft. In this book, he instructs his followers that they must denounce and prosecute any supporters or practitioners of witchcraft. Before James took the English throne, witchcraft wasn't really a thing that people paid too much attention to. It was just an accepted part of British life, as I said, kooky women who could help and heal with the herbs and incantations. But soon after James took the throne, a law was enacted that imposed the death penalty in cases where it had been proven that harm had been caused through the use of magic, or that corpses had been exhumed for magical purposes. When he became King of England, there was a clear divide between Catholics and the Protestants. In order to regain full control of England after the failed gunpowder plot of 1605, James began using religion to his advantage. And his religious beliefs were the right way. Anyone found to be conforming to the old way, Catholicism, including seeming to be accepting of witchcraft, were seen as dangerous dissenters who needed suppressing. Catholics, anyone non-conforming, and anyone who was suspected of witchcraft were under more scrutiny than ever before. It became a mandate for the British to fight witches. So it became a dangerous time to be considered witches for Old Demdike and Mother Chatterox, who were both widowed and could only make their living by selling their cures to local villagers, having to exaggerate the magical element of said cures to do so, to outsell their rival. But as we've already covered, if you didn't conform, you were seen as a dissenter, and that was against the law. It also didn't help that these families lived in Lancashire, which at the time had a reputation for being full of troublemakers. It was a wild, disobedient, and lawless area, about 230 miles away from London, that the king and his court just couldn't control. Most of this thought was probably based on the fact that a large amount of Pendle and Lancashire in general remained faithful to Catholicism despite the king's beliefs. It was said to be a place where the church was honoured without much understanding of its doctrines by the common people. It was well known that after the failed gunpowder plot, a lot of the Catholics still in London fled up north to Lancashire, a very easy place to hide. All of this background and context would directly lead to the outcome of the Pendle witch trials. Our story really begins when Alison Devis, the granddaughter of Old Demdike, was on the road to Trawden Forest one day. She runs into a man, a peddler called John Law, and asks him for some pins. Metal pins at this time were handmade and, because of this, pretty expensive, but were deemed pretty important in magical practices used for a variety of different things. John Law refused to undo his pack and give Alison these pins, perhaps because she was begging and he knew she didn't have money, or perhaps because he knew her to be a descendant of a witch and didn't want to aid her magic. So Alison cursed him, apparently speaking to a black dog which suddenly appeared beside her. The dog asked her what she would like to do to the man, and she tells him to lame him. John walks away about 300 yards before suddenly dropping down. He manages eventually to get to a nearby inn where he falls down again. Whilst they wouldn't have had the terminology to describe what happened to John back in the 1600s, it probably was just him suffering a stroke. He was left paralysed on the left side of his body. He was weak, his speech was hard to understand, and his face was left deformed, according to old documents. Depending on your beliefs, either a pure coincidence or Alison's curse really did work. Even Alison was shocked that her curse actually worked. It seems that John Law didn't immediately make accusations against Alison, but she immediately confessed, feeling awful for her actions. She went to his bedside and begged for his forgiveness. It was a moment of anger. She didn't actually mean it, she said. She fully believed that she was the one responsible for what happened, and the consequences of this would be huge for herself and for her family. In early 1612, every justice of the peace in Lancashire was instructed to make a list of recusants in the area, people who remained loyal to the Catholic Church and the Pope.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So Stephen at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
This Father's Day at Lowe's, score free gifts for the greatest dad. Right now, get a free Blackstone 8-piece accessory kit when you buy a Blackstone 28-inch griddle. Plus, get two free select Craftsman V20 tools when you buy an RP brushless drill and impact driver combo kit. Shop these deals and more this Father's Day at Lowe's. We help, you save. Valid through 6/15 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
For Pendle Hill, the JP was a man called Roger Nowell, who was particularly zealous. He thought that the more nonconformists he could identify and punish, the quicker he could get the king's attention and advance in his career. After John had been cursed, his son, Abraham Law, contacts Nowell and tells him that he knows of a witch. On the 30th of March 1612, Alison, her mother Elizabeth, and her brother James were all summoned to appear before Nowell, who questioned them extensively. Alison immediately confessed her crime, still feeling awful for what she'd done. She said that she'd sold her soul to the devil. Even James admitted their sister had confessed to him about bewitching a local child at one point. Upon further questioning, she also accused her grandmother, Old Demdike, of witchcraft, and even Elizabeth said that Old Demdike had the mark of the devil upon her. But this wasn't enough for Nowell, who continued to question the Devises. It was probably at this point that Alison saw an opportunity for revenge against their rival family, the Whittles. She accused Mother Chattox of murdering four men by witchcraft, and of the murder of her father, which we covered earlier in this video. She also mentioned Chattox's daughter, Anne Redfern. So not long after, Old Demdike, Mother Chattox and Anne Redfern were also summoned to appear before Nowell. Both Demdike and Chattox apparently confessed with little persuasion, both admitting they'd sold their souls to the devil. Anne Redfern, however, made no confession, but Demdike said that she'd seen Anne making clay figures, a very witchy thing to do. Nowell commits Demdike, Chattox, Anne Redfern and Alison Devis to Lancaster Jail to await their trial for causing harm by witchcraft. But that wasn't to be the end of it. On Good Friday 1612, a meeting was planned by Elizabeth Devis at Malkin Tower, the home of the Demdikes. Malkin Tower sounds grand, but it really wasn't. It was not a tower, and the word Malkin actually probably derives from the word mucking, literally meaning shit. It was to be a feast attended by a few locals. James Devis even stole a neighbour's sheep for the occasion. But of course, on Good Friday, any good citizen should be at church. The fact they were holding a meeting at Malkin Tower instead of going to church was very bad behaviour indeed. It was non-conforming. And as we know, the JPs had been instructed by the king to find and charge all Catholics. And of course, an easy way to find hiding Catholics was to compile a list of every single person who refused to take communion in church, particularly easy to see on Good Friday, when any good, loyal Christian would be in attendance. Nowell was now paying close attention to what was going on in Pendle thanks to Alison Devis's confession, and when he heard of this meeting at Malkin Tower instead of church attendance, it was a scandal. What happened in Malkin Tower that day would become a subject of intense scrutiny over the coming months. Was it an Easter feast? Was it a meeting of solidarity for the women accused of witchcraft now in jail? Was it a meeting of witches plotting against those who had jailed their loved ones? Or was it maybe even a meeting to plot to blow up Lancaster Castle and murder its jailer where the loved ones were being held? Local constables heard rumours of this meeting and turned up, arresting everyone who was there. But because nobody at this time seemed to be going down without getting just a little revenge of their own, all of the arrested started accusing others who had also been at this party but already left. All were accused of plotting to kill a man by witchcraft, and another 8 people were sent to join the 4 who had already been arrested. Which is when another family come into the picture, the Nutters, a strong Catholic family. Whilst most of those accused of witchcraft around Pendle were from the lowest walks of life, the Nutters were different. They were wealthier, they were landowners, minor gentry. Robert Nutter actually owned the land that Mother Chattox and her family lived on, and his son and grandson were said to have been victims of witchcraft themselves. Grandson Robert Nutter Jr. was apparently bewitched by Mother Chattox, who had apparently been asked to kill him by his grandmother so that the 2 female cousins could inherit the land. A scandalous idea for the time. Robert Nutter Jr. also apparently had a soft spot for Chattox's daughter, Anne Redfern, and he had threatened to kick Anne off his land because she'd refused his sexual propositions. The Nutters were generally considered to be victims of witchcraft rather than the perpetrators, which made it all that more scandalous when one of the people arrested for being at Malkin Tower on Good Friday was Alice Nutter, an elderly but happily married woman who always declared her innocence. But it didn't matter that she wasn't a witch, she was a Catholic, which was just as bad. Alongside Alice, the other people arrested that night were Elizabeth Devis, James Devis, Catherine Hewitt, John Bullcock, Jane Bullcock, Alice Gray and Janet Preston. All of whom were sent to Lancaster Jail, apart from Janet Preston, who lived in Yorkshire, so she was sent for trial there. Someone who was at Malkin Tower that day but wasn't arrested, despite the rest of her family being, was Janet Devis. It's not known where she lived in the 4 months between the arrest of her entire family and the trial, but it's thought that she may have been kept under the care of Robert Noel himself. She was just a child, she was about 8 or 9 years old, reports say. Janet would prove to be vital to the upcoming trial. We have good transcripts of what went on in the trials because of a book called The Wonderful Discovery of Witches in the County of Lancaster, written by Thomas Knotts, who was the clerk to Lancaster Assizes, the court. He kept detailed records and later wrote them up into book form, which is still available today. The trial began on the 18th of August 1612 in the courtroom at Lancaster Castle. The very same trial room still stands and is in use today. Something that's important to bear in mind is that whilst witches were often accused, it was actually very difficult to find evidence that would stand against them in a court of law. So there was actually an incredibly high acquittal rate usually. People would generally be accused, be found not guilty and go ahead with their normal lives. Which is what made what happened in Pendle and years later in Salem too so unusual. The political landscape at this exact point in time was perfect for a whole lot of witches to be convicted. It served people well to get rid of some witches. Or was it all just really about the Catholics? Was it easier to accuse somebody of being a witch than accuse them of being Catholic, then you could justifiably kill them? By the time the trial rolled around 4 months later, old Demdike had already died in terrible conditions in prison. There were thought to be 20 prisoners, mostly accused witches, stuffed into a cell just 20 foot by 12 foot. Not the best conditions. Alison Devis was one of the first to take the stand at trial, and she didn't even attempt to defend herself. She was overcome with guilt over what she'd done to poor John Law. Thomas Potts was fairly nice about Alison in his book. She was contrite and apologetic, ready to accept whatever punishment befell her. But he didn't like her mother, Elizabeth Devis, as much, describing her as an odious witch, so strangely deformed with uneven eyes looking in different directions. Unlike her daughter, Elizabeth protested her innocence, refusing to accept what was happening. But the trial's star witness had other ideas. The star witness, as you can probably guess, was none other than Elizabeth's own daughter, Janet Devis. She was the youngest of the 3 children and the odd one out, as she wasn't actually thought to be the daughter of John Devis. She was a bastard child. This made her isolated and different, the runt of the litter. She didn't really fit in anywhere, and now here she was being treated like a queen and getting all of the attention she wanted from the people running this trial.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariana. We call him Day Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Message and data rates may apply. Consult a doctor prior to use.
Wow, you look amazing. What have you been doing?
I'm sure you've heard of Ozempic, Wegovy, and the other GLP-1 medications, right? Well, I found this great company called Zelthy. If you qualify, their providers can prescribe medications like Ozempic and Wegovy and other GLP-1 medications that are 80 to 90% less expensive, all 100% online.
I can get GLP-1 medications for 80 to 90% less and do it all online? No doctor's office or pharmacy?
Yes, Zelthy can provide semaglutide or tirzepatide, the active ingredients in Ozempic and other expensive GLP-1s. But for 80 to 90% less and ship directly to your door.
How do I get started with Zelthy?
Call #250 with the word care to get started today with Zelthy. Get the same active ingredients in Wegovy or Ozempic, but for 80 to 90% less and 100% online. Don't wait. Call #250 with the word care right now for a link to your exclusive offer. Call #250 with the word care. That's #250 with the word care. #250 and care.
They brought in 9-year-old Janet to testify against her mother. And once they had removed a screaming and protesting Elizabeth from the room, Janet calmly hopped up onto a table and denounced her own mother as a witch. She believed that Elizabeth had been a witch for 3 or 4 years, that she had a familiar, a supernatural animal apprentice of sorts in the form of a brown dog called Bull. Janet said that she'd witnessed several conversations between Ball and her mother in which they plotted a number of murders. She went on to describe the meeting at Malkin Tower on Good Friday. She said who'd attended, what food they ate, the conversations that had been held. Many think that Janet was simply rehearsing a script that she'd been taught by Noel, but her word was taken as gospel. King James's own book, Demonology, had specified that children should be allowed to testify in court in the case of witches. James Devis also testified against his own mother, saying that he'd seen her making clay figures of her victims. But if he thought it would, this wouldn't help James's own case, as Janet also turned on him, her own brother. She recited incantations in front of the court that she'd allegedly heard James practicing in the house. Interestingly, it later turned out that these incantations had been pieced together with memories of prayers, songs, even text. Janet, being only 9 years old, was recalling information that she didn't fully have the capacity to understand at such a young age. She'd been coached by the courts on what she should be saying. And I have no doubt that she fully believed what she was saying at the time, that she thought she was doing the right thing. She just didn't understand the further implications of what she was doing. The easy part was for Janet to call out her family, but it became more complicated when she had to present evidence and people further removed from her, people she didn't really know. The court made a lineup of the accused witches and more prisoners from the jail and asked Janet to pick out the accused. One by one, she picked out every correct person, identifying who she'd seen at the gathering on Good Friday. So the judge then, seeing if he could catch her out, asked her if she'd seen Joanne Style, a made-up name, to which Janet said she'd never heard of her. And that was proof enough. Janet was definitely telling the truth. On the back of Janet's testimony and instructions found in demonology on how to spot a witch, 10 people were found guilty of witchcraft and were sentenced to hang. Witchcraft was treason against both the king and God and was punishable by death. Elizabeth Devis, Alison Devis, James Devis, Anne Whittle, Anne Redfern, Isabel Roby, Alice Nutter, Jane Bullcock, John Bullcock, and Catherine Hewitt, all sentenced to death. The day after the trial, each convicted witch was brought to Gallows Hill to receive their punishment. It was to be a public spectacle. Locals came to witness. Before the execution, each witch was given a chance to say their final confession in an effort to save their souls. Not their bodies, they were going to die regardless, but save their souls at least. But apparently both Elizabeth Devis and Alice Nutter refused, even with their final breaths. Each was forced to climb a ladder as a noose was hung over their neck and they would be hung from a pole. This wasn't like what you usually hear of and see in movies, with the trapdoor quickly dropping the victim, the rope swiftly breaking their neck. This was a long, slow death, the rope slowly suffocating them. There are records of sometimes family members turning up to tug on their loved one's legs to speed up the process. A very small, grim mercy. And so that was that. Robert Knoll had managed to rid Pendle of witches and hopefully get in good favour with the king, which is what he really wanted all along. These trials set a precedent, which still stands today, that children are allowed to stand as witnesses in courtrooms, which surprisingly had never really been something that was considered standard practice before this. Even today, children as young as 3 years old can give testimony, as long as they're deemed to understand the questions that are being asked of them. After Janet Davis took the stand, children started to be used in witch trials in both Britain and across the Atlantic in the now USA. Which worked out great for prosecutors because children are pretty easy to manipulate. But all of this would come back to haunt Janet Davis, when years later she became a victim of the precedent that she herself had set. 22 years later, in 1634, Janet, now an adult, is accused of witchcraft herself. One day, a 10-year-old boy called Edmund Robinson came home late. When questioned by his parents on his whereabouts, he said that he'd been out picking berries when he came across two greyhounds. He said he tried to get them to chase a hare, but when they refused, he beat them with a stick. Once he did so, they transformed, one into a witch and one into a boy. The witch did her magic and transformed the boy into a horse, which she then used to transport Edmund to a house. Inside this house, he said, hung ropes, and when you pulled on them, amazing food came down. Edmund said he was scared, he ran away, but they chased him. And when he was nearly home, he came across a boy with cloven hooves. So he fought the boy, which is why he came home so banged up and covered in dirt, he said. Which, I mean, is obviously just a child coming up with a very imaginative reason as to why he's home so late, so he doesn't get into trouble. Whilst parents now would roll their eyes and dismiss this story, Edmund's parents were horrified and believed him entirely, reporting this story to the local authorities. His father took him village to village so he could go to the churches and point out the witches he'd seen. It took them 3 months, and he was called locally the boy that discovered witches. On the back of Edmund's accusations, 20 witches were locked up, one of them being Janet Davis, accused of killing Isabel, wife of William Nutter. Although we don't know for sure that it's definitely the same Janet Davis, it's thought that it's incredibly likely that it was. The same families, the Nutters and the Davises are involved, it's in Pendle. It wouldn't be strange if it was the same Janet, she definitely would have still been alive at this point. But kind of luckily for Janet, times had changed in the last 22 years. King James had spent years avidly following witch trials, but as he did so, he actually became more sceptical. In another trial in Leicester in 1616, 9 witches were hanged as a result of a child's testimony. James, ever interested, goes to Leicester himself to interview this child, but finds out quickly that the child had been lying the entire time. From this point onwards, even though it was in his own book, Demonology, that he'd said that children should be allowed to testify, he became more cautious, and puts out a message for judges to be more cautious as well. By the time Edmund told his story, Charles I, James's son, was now king, and he was even more sceptical than his father. Everyone's thinking had changed in this time. In just 20 years, people have become less superstitious, relying more on what we would now consider to be very basic science, more logical. But that didn't make much difference in this trial though, where Edmund took the stand and the jury fully believed him. 17 people were convicted of witchcraft, all but one found to be guilty. But the jury wasn't quite convinced enough to give the death sentence, deciding instead to refer the case to the king in London. 4 of the convicted were sent to London, but Janet was kept back at the castle. They'd already been in jail for 15 months at this point, and many had already died in that time of jail fever. It's likely that Janet and the rest all ended up dying in jail, even though it did become regarded that Edmund was lying. What goes around comes around, I suppose. I wonder if Edmund ever paid for his lies. He strikes me as just a child who lost track of time and came up with the tall tales so his parents didn't tell him off.
I can't tell you how often I hear, oh, I'm a little OCD. I like things neat. That's not OCD. I'm Howie Mandel, and I know this because I have OCD. Actual OCD causes relentless unwanted thoughts. What if I did something terrible and forgot? What if I'm a bad person? Why am I thinking this terrible thing? It makes you question absolutely everything, and you'll do anything to feel better. OCD is debilitating, but it's also highly treatable with the right kind of therapy. Regular talk therapy doesn't cut it. OCD needs specialized therapy. That's why I want to tell you about NoCD. NoCD is the world's largest virtual therapy provider for OCD. Their licensed therapists provide specialized therapy virtually, and it's covered by insurance for over 155 million Americans. If you think you might be struggling with OCD, visit NoCD.com to schedule a free 15-minute call and learn more. That's NoCD.com.
McCrispy strips are now at McDonald's. Tender, juicy, and its own sauce. Would you look at that? Well, you can't see it, but trust me, it looks delicious. New McCrispy strips, now at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
When he realized the attention Story bought him, he just ran with it. In fact, Edmund Story would soon be made into a play called The Late Lancashire Witches, which you can still catch sometime today. You know a story is interesting when somebody considers it worthy of a play. The idea of witches didn't just disappear after the 1630 trials. As we know, the Salem witch trials didn't happen across the Atlantic for a number of years. But it seems that slowly, over time, logic would come more into play. I mean, witches aren't a thing of the past by any means. There's still plenty of people who identify as witches nowadays. But the idea of what magic is has changed. I think the main moral of the story is, don't put a child on the stand in the case of witchcraft. It might lead to just a few unnecessary deaths. Pendle and Lancashire today profit on their supernatural history. Just give it a quick Google and you can find shops, walking tours, ghost hunts, castle tours, all pertaining back to the Pendle witches. Maybe I'm going to put a trip up to Lancashire on my bucket list for Halloween next year. In 1988, a petition was presented to the Home Secretary asking the Pendle witches to be pardoned, but he decided the conviction should stand, making the statement, "The Pendle witches were apparently convicted according to the law of the time, harsh though it seems by modern standards." As I have indicated, the Home Secretary would generally consider intervening in a case such as this only if evidence came to light which showed conclusively that the Pendle witches did not commit the crimes with which they were charged. On the basis of the material we have seen, the Pendle witches case does not appear to be one where it would be appropriate to recommend a posthumous free pardon. Which I suppose some of them wouldn't be that mad about. I mean, Alison Devis, Old Demdike, Mother Chattox all admitted to being witches. Elizabeth Devis and Alice Nutter, however, are probably turning in their graves. And that is the story of the Pendle witches. It's really interesting to know that children are still allowed to testify in court today based on the precedent set at this very trial. Thank you so much for tuning into this week's episode of Mysteries and Histories. If you have a bit of time, I would love for you to go and leave a review wherever you're listening to this podcast and spread the word. It would be much appreciated. I'll see you next week.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.